Do 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 do. Good evening. It's time for another chapter in Bedtime Stories with Thompson. We're reading The Swiss Family Robinson by Johann Wyss. This is chapter 6, The Journey into the Interior. Ooh. What a strange procession we made as we wound our way up through the rocks to the waterfall that towered above Jackal's River. In the lead were Elizabeth and Francis, with Jack and Ernest close behind. Fritz and I brought up the rear, followed by a flock of stray ducks and geese who tagged along. The little monkey, still keyed up from the cannon blast, ran ahead. Every now and then he'd stop and motion us on. To my astonishment, Elizabeth led us to a handsome garden, all laid out in neat little rows. "I'm amazed," I said, "at all you have accomplished in such a short period of time. Was it hard work?" "Not really," she answered, very pleased with herself. "The earth is light here and composed of many dead leaves. Francis and I found it easy to rake and hoe." "Look, Papa," cried Francis, pointing around him as he spoke. "We planted potatoes here, corn here, sugarcane here, and lettuce here. And over here we planted all the fruit trees." "Well, you haven't left anything for me to do," I said. "Oh, yes, I have," Elizabeth assured me. "I'm going to depend on you to make an irrigation system using bamboo canes to carry the water over from the falls to our thirsty plants." "This would be a good spot to house our pigeons and chickens," I said, looking around. "I could make individual coops from gourds and tie them in the trees." "Maybe you could make hives for the bees," Elizabeth suggested. "Father," cried Ernest, who had wandered away, "come quick, I found a crocodile." "A crocodile," I said, laughing. "What an imagination you have, Ernest. Who ever heard of a crocodile living in these rocks without a drop of water?" "See for yourself. He's asleep on that stone there." We stole quietly to the ledge where the animal lay, but instead of a crocodile, it turned out to be a sort of lizard called an iguana. "I'm going to shoot him," whispered Fritz. "No, son. It would be hard to pierce that scaly coat. If you make him angry, he could be dangerous. I have a better idea." I cut a stick from a bush and tied a long string to it. Then I knotted the loose end and cautiously tiptoed toward the iguana, who was snoozing peacefully in the sun. When I was very near him, I began whistling a lively tune, an air from my native Switzerland. The creature smiled in his sleep. Suddenly he opened one eye and raised his head to hear the music. As he looked around, I tickled him gently with my stick. To my joy, the iguana flipped over, stretched himself flat on his back, and undulated with his tail as if he was overwhelmed by the music. He raised his head again, and I threw my noose over him. "Draw it tight," cried Ernest. "Strangle him," yelled Jack. "No," I said firmly. "Why make him suffer any more than he has to?" And quick as a flash, I plunged my knife into him. Soon he was dead. Throwing the iguana over my shoulder, I started home to Falcon's Nest. Francis walked behind carrying the animal's tail, which would have dragged the ground otherwise. That night, as we all sat under our fig tree, dining on this new delicacy, I said, "I think the time has come to sink the wreck and explore the interior of the island. We have yet to see the land beyond the rocks at Tent House." "Can I go this time?" begged Jack. "Yes, I will need you three oldest boys to help blow up the ship, too." "When are we going to do that?" asked Fritz. "Tomorrow. We will sail out to the wreck and put a cask of gunpowder on deck. Just before we abandon ship, we will light it. If luck is with us, we will be ashore before the explosion." The actual destruction of the wreck was an emotional time for us all. As the ship sank into the sea, our hearts went with it. The question we were wondering was, will we ever see our beloved Switzerland again? That done, the hour came to set out on the expedition into the interior. Bidding Elizabeth and Francis goodbye, we set out with Grizzle, our mule, who pulled our sled piled high with the necessary equipment, a tent, food, ammunition, and utensils. Turk and Flora came tearing after us. The land beyond Tent House was equally as exotic as the side where we had settled. Our path led us through one forest after another of the most unusual trees we had ever seen. I recognized the guava tree, whose fruit resembled our apple, and the candleberry tree, whose heavy berries form candle wax when boiled. "Your mother is going to be delighted with our discoveries," I told the boys as we roamed through some Indian rubber trees. I left a large gourd under one of these trees to catch its milky sap. From this sap, I would later make boots and shoes. "My, these acorns are sweet," said Jack, tasting the nuts of the stately oaks. "And the beans from these cocoa trees are good, too," said Ernest, as he stuffed his pockets full. "They will make a delicious chocolate drink." "You must come see this view," I called when we came out of the woods. In front of us was a magnificent bay that stretched far out to sea. "Now where is that grizzle?" "He just took off through the bamboo trees," Ernest said, "and he was going at a fast gallop, too." "Well, we must go after him," I answered. But Grizzle was nowhere to be seen. Only his prints remained in the soil. An hour later, we left the bamboo forest and came to a river which we crossed. To our amazement, we found the prints of other, much larger animals on the bank. "What could they be?" asked Jack. "Let's follow them and find out," I suggested. Soon afterwards, we came to a great plain where we saw some tiny specks moving in the distance. As we drew closer, we realized that they were animals the size of cows or horses. "By George, they're wild buffaloes!" I exclaimed. As we approached, the buffaloes remained motionless, merely staring at us with their large, round eyes. Those that were lying down rose lazily to their feet. Suddenly, our fearless dogs ran into their midst and attacked a young buffalo. At that same moment, I fired my gun and the whole troop began to stampede. In no time at all, they were out of sight. Now we were left with only the young buffalo and his mother, whom I had wounded with my one shot. Angry now, she stomped her hoofs in the dust and bellowed loudly, with her head held low and steam pouring from her nostrils. She took aim and charged directly at Turk and Flora. End of chapter 6. What's gonna happen? The buffalo's gonna charge. We'll find out next time. Good night.